Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Philippe Belopion, who is the United Nations Director at Human Rights Watch. Previously, he spent 5 years working with the French daily Le Monde as the UN correspondent, where he covered such places as Darfur, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, Sri Lanka, Gaza, and Haiti, including on missions with the UN Secretary Generals and the UN Security Council. His latest article at the Washington Post is Preventing Atrocities in the Central African Republic. Welcome to Background Briefing, Philippe Belopion.
Thanks for having me.
And Philippe, of course, on this day where we learn of the death of Nelson Mandela, it could not be more of a contrast, I guess, in terms of what he stood for and what he struggled for, to be talking about the hideous situation in the Central African Republic. So before we begin, do you have any comments on the death of Nelson Mandela?
Look, it's an incredibly sad day for any human rights activist, and you know, his death is only an additional reason for us to do whatever is in our power to help prevent the situation in the Central African Republic from descending into complete chaos.
So with that said, Philippe, tell us about the situation. You have been there, and I believe conditions have deteriorated rapidly for some time following a coup by the military, and now there's a new dimension with these Islamists.
Well, yeah, the situation in the country is extremely bad and quickly deteriorating. What's happened is that for many months now, since the beginning of the year, some rebels called the Seleka took over power in March and installed the first Muslim president of this overwhelmingly Christian country. And the Seleka fighters for many months have killed, raped, looted in complete impunity. As a reaction to this violence in early September, some Christian militia groups were reactivated. They call themselves the anti-Balaka, which means anti-machete in the Sango language, which is the national language. And sadly, these militias have used the same brutal, bloody tactics as the Seleka that they are claiming to fight. So they have themselves turned on Muslim villagers and slit the throats of children, killed women with the same impunity. So we have entered a cycle of massacres and counter-massacres, and a country that had nothing to do with religion to begin with is increasingly becoming sectarian, which is, of course, a very scary development.
And Philippe Belopion, does that mean that both the Islamic militias, the army of this country, and the Christian militias, do they focus mostly on slaughtering the innocents, or do they fight each other?
Look, occasionally they attack each other, but you know, it's very easy to hide in the dense jungle in the northern part of the country, for example. So at times they clash, but often they have simply targeted innocent and defenseless civilians. For example, I talked to an older man who described how anti-Balaka, the Christian militia men, arrived very early in the morning to his house, took everybody out, his two kids and his two wives and 11 kids and grandkids. He was able to escape and hide in the tall grass, but he saw anti-Balaka men take each and every of his kids to a guy who had a knife and slit their throats. And then they slit the throats of his two wives. Another group of Muslim villagers described how anti-Balaka men arrived in their village at 5 a.m. in the morning and said that they would kill all the Muslims, that they wanted to exterminate all the Muslims, and separated the men from the women and kids, killed four of the men, including a 13-year-old boy, and the 22 women and kids from the village have disappeared ever since, and they are believed to be dead. So these are the kinds of violence that we are witnessing in the country.
Again, I'm speaking with Philippe Belopion, who is the United Nations Director at Human Rights Watch. Previously, he spent 5 years working with the French daily Le Monde and as the UN correspondent, where he covered such places as Darfur, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, Sri Lanka, Gaza, and Haiti, including on missions with UN Secretary Generals and the UN Security Council. His latest article at the Washington Post is Preventing Atrocities in the Central African Republic. And in terms of preventing atrocities, it would seem that we're way past that point in terms of prevention. But walk us through the steps that happened to reach this point in terms of what happened to the original government and how did this coup take over. And then I believe that the military sort of split, did it not, along Christian and Islamic lines, and now the French are sending in troops. So let's go back to the beginning of how this country unraveled.
Well, I mean, first, it's one of the poorest countries on earth. In the UNDP ranking, it ranks at number 180 out of 188 countries. So it's a desolate place. And it has a history of violent takeovers. The previous president, François Bozizé, arrived through a coup himself, and he was committing himself very, or his government was responsible for serious human rights violations as well. The rebels came from the northeastern part of the country, which is has a larger number of Muslims and has historically been underdeveloped and a bit abandoned by Bangui, by the capital city and the central power. But the rebels that came into power, the Seleka, didn't have any real political or religious agenda. What they did is enrich themselves through taking over power, and all the way to Bangui, the capital city, they pillaged everything they could get their hands on. Now, you know, these guys are in power. The president, Michel Djotodia, is one of the former leaders of the Seleka rebels. There was a small and ill-equipped peacekeeping force from the regional organization. It's being a bit beefed up by the African Union, and it's receiving right now reinforcement by the French, who already had something like 400 troops in the country, and are now sending an additional 800 troops. The idea is that the French will help the African Union force better protect civilians. But in our view, this is far from sufficient. What you need in the country at this stage to prevent the worst from happening, because as bad as it is, it could get much worse. What you need right now is a UN peacekeeping mission of blue helmets, between 6,000 and 9,000 of them, as recommended by the UN Secretary General, and you need this quickly.
So is that a realistic request? I mean, the UN is in the Congo. They've been there for years. Do they have the resources or do they have the will?
Well, if the political will is there, in particular from the five permanent members of the Security Council and the U.S. in particular, it could happen very quickly. There are many U.N. peacekeeping missions around the world. In fact, there are many in the region, in South Sudan, for example, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. You know, in Africa, we have missions in Liberia, in Ivory Coast, and some of them have a pretty good track record. Of course, it's not a silver bullet, and it's not, you know, it doesn't mean that the crisis will be solved tomorrow. But the UN has knowledge on how to protect civilians. They also come with the kind of civilian expertise that you really need in the country right now to help organize elections, to rebuild the justice system, to rebuild the security forces, to work on reconciliation, to monitor human rights violations. So that's the kind of stuff that the UN knows how to do.
So the UN's not in any way stymied like they are in Syria, with Russia and China on one side and the US and Europe on the other. nobody's objecting to the peacekeepers coming in to rescue these innocents from being slaughtered. It's just what? Just logistics? And if the French are putting in 400 troops and you say they need you need about 7,000, there's a considerable gap there.
There is a gap. I mean, right now you have 2,500 African peacekeepers. You have 1,200 French reinforcements. So that still leaves you with a significant gap. The UN Security Council today passed a resolution which authorized the UN Secretary General to start getting ready for a UN peacekeeping mission. So right now the UN is authorized to start getting ready for such a deployment. But of course, it takes time. You need to find troop-contributing countries. You need to move them to the region. You need to ensure that they have the right equipment, the right command structure. So in a best-case scenario, the deployment of UN peacekeepers would take at least 6 months. But you still need the UN Security Council to authorize it at the end of the day. We didn't see any strong objections from any of the permanent members of the Security Council right now. I think a few countries, the US in particular, have budgetary concerns that they are weighing. But we are confident that at the end of the day, when all of these countries consider what's at stake here, which is the risk of allowing the country to descend into mass atrocities, they will realize that the money issue can be solved.
And Philippe Bellopion, with Human Rights Watch, your recent article in the Washington Post, Preventing Atrocities in the Central African Republic, you talk about the danger of the Central African Republic becoming a failed state that is a haven for armed groups, and the relentlessly abusive Lord's Resistance Armies is known to be active in the country's southeast. And that, of course, is led by Joseph Kony, and there's been a lot of attention on efforts to get him, and I believe U.S. Special Forces are operating there. It would seem that it is a failed state at this point, is it not? I mean, I don't know what that definition means anymore, because it's thrown around a lot, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I think it's an extremely weak state, but the truth is it could be worse. You know, you could have complete anarchy in the country, and we are not that far from that, especially today. There were attacks by these Christian militias, anti-Balaka, in Bangui, so they are getting close, they are fighting back, so it could get worse. And of course, this would have a huge regional consequences. It's a very unstable neighborhood. You have among the neighboring countries Chad, which has been quite unstable over the years. You have southern Sudan, which of course has its own share of problems. You have the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which is still one of the biggest UN peacekeeping mission and still struggling to become stabilized. And you have the LRA, the Lord's Resistance Army, operating in that whole area. So, of course, if Central African Republic was allowed to become a completely failed state, it would become a magnet for all kinds of armed groups in the region with all kinds of different agendas.
So President Obama, of course, in your article, you say he needs to explain to Americans why support for another UN mission in a country they've never heard of is important. Is there any way that, I mean, with the death of Nelson Mandela, I'm sure all of the media's attention is going to be going on for the next couple of days with obituaries and et cetera. Is there any way to get some attention on this horrible situation?
Well, I think people are starting to pay attention. I was invited myself only a couple of weeks ago to testify in front of the Africa subcommittee of the House of Representatives in Washington. The media is starting to pick up the story. So people are starting to pay attention, including in the U.S. And I think there is the recognition of the fact that things could become really bad in this country. And people, you know, after Rwanda, after Bosnia, said that we wouldn't let that happen again. So now it's time to show that we mean it. And if all it means is deploying a few thousand UN peacekeepers, I think it's a very realistic goal, and I'm confident that the US and other countries will get behind it eventually.
So what's your understanding, though, in why this has taken on all of a sudden this sectarian tone, where you've got Muslim forces massacring Christians and destroying churches, and then you've got Christians retaliating? I mean, you're saying that there's no history of this in these countries. You've also got the same thing happening in Nigeria with Boko Haram. So what is driving this sectarianism, this emerging sectarianism?
Well, I mean, I think it's several factors. The first one is impunity. If you are a Christian villager and you've been attacked 2-3 times by Seleka fighters who have taken everything you had, have killed your cattle, sometimes killed members of your family, at some point, if you see no justice, you will be tempted to take justice into your own hands. Now, it's an overwhelmingly Christian country that is also seeing an armed rebel group, which is composed mostly of Muslims, and installing its first Muslim president. So this creates tensions. And then you have armed groups who are trying to exploit these tensions to justify the unjustifiable, which is the killing of defenseless civilians. When I was in the Central African Republic a few weeks ago, I met with the national religious leaders of the country, at least with the Archbishop of Bangui and the main imam of the country. And both men were, in my view, acting in a very responsible way. They were doing whatever they could to calm down the tensions, and they were making clear that this was not a Muslim-Christian conflict. It was a conflict between armed groups who are targeting civilians. And I think these voices need to be supported. At the core, this is not a religious war, and we shouldn't allow it to become one.
But more than 400,000 people, nearly 10% of the population, have been internally displaced. And I imagine it's getting worse. So it's starting to sort of take on the kind of shades of what's happening in Syria.
Well, we are not at the scale
of Syria. No, of course not. No, but
yeah. That we see in Syria. But the situation is really bad. I mean, when I was there, you go through entire villages that have been completely deserted. They are ghost towns. And all of these people live deep in the bush, in absolute fear. They have very little to eat. Their kids die of malaria. Their wives are giving birth under trees. So there is no question that the situation is horrendous and getting worse. This is why there is really no time to waste in doing the kind of things that can be done, including the deployment of a UN peacekeeping mission.
Well, Philippe Balopion, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Philippe Balopion, who is the United Nations Director at Human Rights Watch. Previously, he spent 5 years working with the French Daily Le Monde as the UN correspondent, where he covered such places as Darfur, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, Sri Lanka, Gaza, and Haiti, including on missions with UN Secretary Generals and the UN Security Council. His latest article at the Washington Post is Preventing Atrocities at the Central African Republic, and he was in the Central African Republic about 2 weeks ago. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.